You know, I'm sure you've heard the story of the guy who was out hiking and he fell off the cliff, and in falling off the cliff, he grabbed onto the branch and he's dangling there, hanging on for dear life, you know, grasping that branch as tight as he possibly can, and he's yelling, "Help! Help!" And this voice comes, "I can help you." And he's like so relieved. And the voice says, "All you have to do is let go, and you will be safe." And this man, "Is there anybody else up there?" Letting go. Letting go. Maybe one of the most difficult things for us to do. There's a story of an old pastor who had to retire somewhat early because of ill health. And after years and years and years and years and years of preaching, his voice had become kind of weak and wobbly and kind of cracked and barely audible. Now, he was a humble man who lived simply and lived his life in service for others. And everybody talked about him as if, you know, this man, and I'm sure you've met people like this, he had a presence. There was something about him, something, his spirit kind of shone through. He just had this incredible presence. Well, he was invited to a high society charitable luncheon by a friend of his. Kind of felt out of place, but he went to this luncheon, and the organizers of this luncheon hired a famous, well-known, everybody would know the name of this actor, to recite any request the audience would make. And this actor would recite it. Well, the old pastor sat there and he thought for a second. And finally he kind of spoke up and said, "You know, I never tire of hearing the 23rd Psalm." Well, this actor said, "One of my favorites. Happy to do this." But somebody had whispered that this gentleman was a pastor, so he said, "I'm going to do it on one condition, that you recite it after me." Well, the old pastor was kind of reluctant about that because he was never one for the limelight, never one for the spotlight on him, but this opportunity he would have to be able to proclaim the divine presence he so intimately, deeply felt in his own life that helped him to walk through those dark valleys. So he agreed. Well, the actor got up. Beautiful. He recited the 23rd Psalm with incredible drama. The audience was absolutely mesmerized by his lyrical voice. In fact, when he finished, they spontaneously stood up and applauded. The old pastor, because of his ill health, was not able to stand. From where he was seated, he began to speak those words. Now, his voice was very weak and wobbly and kind of cracked and barely audible. But when he finished, there wasn't a dry eye in the place. And the actor got up. And he said, "You know, when I recited the psalm, you applauded. When he recited the psalm, you wept. And to me, the reason is obvious. I know the words of the psalm. He intimately knows the love of the shepherd. I entertained you. He drew you close to the love that your heart so deeply, deeply longs for." As I was thinking about this story and spirituality and soul care, it occurred to me that in our consumeristic culture that we live in, that we're part of, that we contribute to, that in some ways it's hard to separate ourselves from, in our consumeristic culture, sometimes we settle, I think, for being entertained when our heart longs for something much, much, much deeper. And that even goes for church, if we're honest with each other. I mean, if we're honest with each other, there's sometimes we just as soon be entertained when we come to worship. And do we actually long to be transformed, changed? In our consumeristic culture, it would seem to me that we've objectified spirituality. Do you remember the bumper sticker a few years back? I don't know how many years back this was, but it said, "I found it." Am I alone in this? You got it? You found it and you got it? You found it and got it? You know, I found it. I found it. So God, the mysterious holy other, is an it, an object for us to consume for our satisfaction. God, this mysterious God that is beyond our imagination, that is beyond our comprehension. I mean, I always love to say my knowledge of God, my understanding of God, the what I have found of God is a grain of sand in my hand. That's how much I think I grasp the vastness of the mystery of the realm of God, is a grain of sand in the palm of my hand. And God is not only the beach, but every beach on the face of the planet. This God beyond comprehension, this God beyond our imagination, this God of mystery, the God, what I like to say, the God beyond the God that we label as God. You with me on that one? That God has become an it, an object in the sentence where I am the subject. That we've objectified spirituality. That in our consumeristic society, spirituality, to a certain extent, it becomes on what's in it for me? Where God's delegated to the sidelines, and I'm at the center. It's all about my personal growth. It's all about my peace. It's all about my happiness. You know, what are the seven steps to peace and happiness? What are the keys to prosperity? It's all about advancing myself. Not falling more deeply in love with God. Loving my neighbor. So it's about addition. Spirituality has become about addition. What can I add to my life to fill that empty God-shaped vacuum inside of me? Long, long time ago, in the 14th century, a mystic I love by the name of Meister Eckhart said, spirituality is more about subtraction than addition. That's what I want you to wrestle. You can remember Janet's children's talk was fabulous. But what I want you to wrestle and remember, what's that mean? Spirituality is about subtraction, not addition. You think of Jesus. If we think of the wisdom and the grace and the incredible strength of spirit we witness in Jesus, that did not come about by working harder, by achieving more, by getting more, by grasping, by holding, by controlling. It came about through surrendering, letting go, self-emptying. You know, holding that branch, let go, trust. To me, it's the lesson of the monkeys. You know the lesson of the monkeys? How to catch a monkey? You hollow out a gourd, attach it to something. You make the hole in the gourd just large enough so the monkey can squeeze its little fingers inside. You fill the gourd with peanuts. What does the monkey do? Fills its fist with peanuts because the monkey's a consumer. And wants those peanuts. And then the monkey tries to get out, but it's trapped. And trapped, no longer free. Now, all the monkey has to do to be free, really, is let go. Surrender. Open. Hand over those peanuts. And then the monkey is free. But what the monkey does each and every time, this has been tested. Each and every time what the monkey does, it feels so familiar, is it holds tighter and works harder until the monkey is so exhausted that the monkey then is just waiting there to be caught. I think the illusion that we live in our culture is that freedom for us comes from grabbing more and protecting what we grab, holding on, grasping for life. Where freedom is letting go, emptying, surrendering. That the goal of the spiritual journey, maybe perhaps, is to bring those things to God, to surrender those things to God, to hand over those things to God that stand in the way of experiencing God's love. You know, what are those things that stand in the way between you and God? Fear? Is it control? Is it control of yourself? Control of others? Control of life? The need for security? Is it the need to be right? The need to be first? The need to be important? You know, Jesus nowhere said, "Thou shalt be right." We forget that sometimes. Is it your fear of failure? Sometimes the best way to the only way in our lives that we actually do surrender, oftentimes, interestingly enough, is when we failed, is when we're most open to God. Is it the fear of failure? Fear of rejection? Is it greed? Is it pride? Your ego? What is it that stands between you and that deep communion with God's Spirit? Someone once wrote, "Spirituality is dying to your false self so that your true self, which is God's life inside of you, might rise unencumbered." So what we're called to do then is hand over those things, those obstacles, to God. And focus on God's presence. What we do is we focus on our problems. We focus on our desires. We focus on me. What would happen if we focused on God and God's presence? And trying to just hand over whatever we think it is that gets in the way from us experiencing that presence. That spirituality is about letting go. It's about subtraction, not addition. It's about letting go, not holding on. It's about surrendering, not controlling. It's not about me and my ego. It's about God. And the fullness of God being more present in me and through me and around me. And me getting the heck out of the way. Because I just screw it up. Today's story, it's hard to get our heads around the Transfiguration story. So I want a little bit of context. Let's again look at mountains. Mountains are super, super important. I don't know if it's because, I mean, I know sometimes when I see the Cascades, when I'm driving to work, I just feel small. I do, I feel small. Not in a negative, pessimistic way, but it helps me remind me of my place in the universe. And that's a good thing. Or maybe after getting to the top of South Sisters, we have nothing left of our own energy and resources, so we're so depleted that we're finally open to not do it ourselves, but allow God to take over. I don't know what it is about mountains, but mountains were super important to the people of Israel. I mean, look at special things happen on the top of mountains. I mean, Moses saw God in a burning bush on the top of a mountain. The Ten Commandments were received on the top of a mountain. Jesus gave his most important sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, on the top of a mountain. So it seems when Jesus takes a few friends to go on the top of a mountain, it's kind of like the Bible saying, pay attention, something important is happening here. It's clear that Jesus went to pray, to surrender himself, that he might experience the fullness of God's presence, to empty himself, that he might be in deep, deep communion with God's Spirit. And the story says something cool happened. Jesus emptied so much of himself that there was this light that shone all around him and in him and through him and around him, and people were amazed by it. He was transformed. His presence was different. He looked different. Have you ever been around people like that? People who are just so, they've given up so much of themselves that they're so present to you, so present to love, so present to God. They just look different. So it says the disciples didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to wrap their heads around this. It says they were amazed. So Peter did what we would do. Hey, we need to build a church here. I mean, they didn't know what to do with this mystery. What I think is important for us to remember today in this story is it happened at a very critical time in the journey of Jesus. It happened at the time where Jesus was moving from Galilee. Galilee was his backyard. I mean, he was doing some crazy things, but he was safe in his backyard. I mean, it's where his family was. He was transitioning from his backyard to Jerusalem, to the road that would lead to his death. Jesus needed whatever it was that took place on that mountain. His spirit needed that sense of God, that deep communion with God's Spirit, to walk that valley through the shadow of death without fear. I think of Martin Luther King, that incredible sermon right before he died. I have been to the mountaintop. Do you remember? Maybe he too had a holy encounter. A holy encounter that gave him the strength to love and to pursue justice, even though he knew, probably, it would cost him his life. Now, this transformation of Jesus was not so that he would build a Christian empire. Peter, let's build a church. It was not so that he would have more power on earth. It was not so that he would have more peace and happiness in his life. He was transformed that he would be greater service to the world. I guess I'd like us to wrestle with, is such a transformation possible for you and me? I think it's hard because we turn spirituality, I think, into addition. What we need to add. You know, we even make transformation, you know, a prize, a spiritual prize, if we work hard enough at it. Where it's a gift. A spiritual gift. Quite frankly, a gift we stumble over when we surrender. Hand our life over. Let go. Way back, eons ago, I was a chaplain at the University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinic in the pediatric oncology unit. And I'm embarrassed to say at this particular juncture in my life, even though I was a chaplain, I knew a lot about God. I'd read a lot of books. But I'd never really experienced grace. Never really experienced the transforming power of God's love. I mean, spirituality for me was something I did. It was a time in my life where I had a lot to prove. I had to prove myself. I had to prove what I knew. I had to prove my skills. Mostly, I just had to prove that I was worthy of God's love. And I was working hard at it. Do you work hard at it? Spirituality was something I added as a way to gain advancement for myself. It was my means to try to understand, to learn, to grow. My mountaintop experience was standing at the bedside of Ryan, a five-year-old, the most incredible big brown eyes you've ever seen, as he took his last breath, succumbing to the battle of leukemia that he'd so bravely fought for a couple years. In that moment, everything I thought I knew about God, everything I thought I believed about God, all of the skills I thought I had to help people, all of that just crumbled to the ground and flew out the window. I had nothing. I'd never been so scared, so hurt, so empty, so lost, so confused. I had nothing. I was nothing. My defenses were gone. My pretenses were gone. Yet it was Ryan's family and the doctors and nurses that were gathered around that bed who turned to me because I had that funny collar that I was supposed to provide whatever would help them in that moment. And I had nothing. And it was the first time in my life, I'm embarrassed to say, that I surrendered. I just prayed, God, I have nothing. I'm scared. It's hard to talk about because it's one of those hard to explain. But this spirit rose up within and wrapped itself around me. And it was real. It was palpable. I could feel it. I felt held. And as I got out of the way, it was as if the Spirit of God just kind of took over. And I was just simply there as a vehicle. I found myself going to the sink. And I grabbed a paper cup and I filled it with water. And I came back and I baptized Ryan's heart, and I just said, this is where he felt your love and where his love reached out to you. And I baptized his hands and said, this is where he's held you and you've held on to him. And I baptized his lips and said, this is where he smiled, and that spirit that could not be defeated shined through. And people started to tell stories. And amidst the weeping and the sobbing and the tears, there was laughter, celebrating the treasure of this precious little life. And in this devastatingly dark room, there was this light that held us all. And I knew that that light was stronger than the darkness. I hadn't read that in a book. I hadn't learned that in a class. I surrendered and experienced the mystery of God's amazing, transforming love. This week begins the season of Lent. I invite you to contemplate a spirituality of subtraction. What do you need to surrender? To let go? To hand over? William Sloane Coffin says, faith is to be grasped by the power of God's love. But in order to be grasped by the power of God's love, we need to stop and let go of trying to grasp so tightly onto life. And to let God love us. May it be so.